welcome back to another episode of Bed Talks. Man, we are almost at the end of the year. I can't believe it.
So close.
Like, what, 2 weeks away?
Yes.
We have two more weeks remaining.
Yes.
And then we'll be into 2021, which we hope will be less less stressful than 2020. We are so excited today to have on our show Dr. Purvis Taylor. Welcome to the show, Purvis.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
And I have to say something Elizabeth said, you know, we're hoping. I'm a man who believes in expectations, so I'm expecting 2021 to be a whole lot better with a lot of learning lessons in between than 2020. Because as I heard someone say recently, they said, oh, you just got 2020. And I thought about it, I said, what do they mean? Well, because 2020 has been so up and down. Now that's the new term, you just got 2020.
People made all kind of turns around 2020. COVID has affected people in so many ways. So COVID's getting blamed for like a lot of changes in people's behavior and habits and everything else. So anyway, that being said, we're going to take this show in a positive direction.
That's right.
Dr. Purvis Taylor, you recently got your PhD. So congratulations on that.
Awesome.
By the way,
thank you.
As soon as I said Purvis, I said, I mean Dr. Purvis Taylor, because people work too hard for that PhD
to negate it.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
What's up, everybody? My name is Purvis Taylor. You don't got to call me doctor. I am an award-winning celebrity life coach, speaker, author of the book Survival Mode. It's a book that teaches men of color how to process and navigate through their emotions and mental health. I have a master's degree in clinical psychology. I've been working in the space of coaching and wellness mental health advocacy for 10 years. So this is my 10th year, so I've been doing this work for a while, and I truly, truly love what I do.
Awesome.
Originally, I'm a country boy. I'm originally from Texas, in New York now, so I got
to
end that.
He had to throw that out there for Kay, because Kay is always going to let you know he's a country boy.
So he was
very excited to have you on the show. He's like, honey, can you please bring some more men on the show? Because I kind of forget, you know, and I have a lot of women on the show, and so I was connected to you through someone, Jade, who's a mutual peer of both of ours, and I started reading about your work, and I really loved the things you were saying and the way you were trying to make men comfortable with expressing emotions. I like a lot of what you say around when we repress, those things keep coming back around.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that you see are common that men struggle with? Because on our show, we talk about relationships and different topics, but I think this is an important show because sometimes we think men don't have the same feelings or reactions that women do to things, but men do. I mean, we're all human and actually have a lot more in common than not. So what are some of the common themes that you see, and how do you help men through expressing, you know, these emotions?
Well, I would say one of the biggest is, there's many, but I would say the biggest one that pops up for me as you asked the question was a lot of time I feel like a lot of men don't have the language to communicate what it is that they're experiencing. And that's for many, many reasons, right? That's culturally, that's just through education. And you know, I try to teach men how to develop an emotional lexicon, which is important because there's so many more emotions than angry, mad, and sad, or horny, or feeling, you know what I mean? So like, there's so many things that happen, and as human beings, we experience emotions in various degrees and intensity. So I try to teach men like, yo, it's more than just angry. Maybe you're feeling blue. Maybe you're feeling melancholy. You might not be upset. You know what I mean? So it's like, in understanding the language and being able to communicate that helps your partner, that helps your therapist, that helps whomever in your life get you the help that you need if you're more specific about what it is that you're experiencing.
You know, I'll go ahead.
No.
One of the things I saw that you had posted was about anger and indifference. Mm. And I thought it was really interesting how you broke that down. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? Because this goes back to how men sometimes process their emotions. And people in general, I think. I think this is kind of universal in a way.
It's very universal.
Yeah. So can you break down what that meant? Because I thought that was a really great learning lesson around emotional intelligence.
Yeah. So, you know, in emotional intelligence, they found that the two emotions that most human beings, but specifically men, are comfortable displaying, and that's anger and indifference, right? Indifference being, I don't feel anything, I'm just numb, right? And then anger, which is the most powerful emotion because it's really a secondary emotion. And because underneath the anger is hurt, and underneath the hurt is disappointment, and underneath the disappointment is an expectation that wasn't met. And so anger feels so empowering, more so than living in the truth of feeling hurt, right? Anger is more empowering. We feel like we feel like we can take on the world because we're angry, but not realizing that if the anger is not constructive, it's usually destructive. And so that's the thing that I try to teach men is like, if your anger is going to lead to some reform, some change, some positive things, great. But if it's not, then you need to discover what it is that's undergirding that anger, which is the hurt and the disappointment and the expectation that hasn't been met.
In other words, channeling those anger emotions, if I'm understanding you correctly, in a productive manner or in the right direction, because we all deal with those types of emotions, but how are we channeling those emotions? That's the question.
And in that instance, when it's constructive, that's righteous indignation. So for instance, like Rosa Parks, I'm not giving up my seat. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. I'm mad. I'm like, that led right. to a whole reform.
Right.
Right. You know, so that's righteous indignation. Mm-hmm. Well, more often than not, we're not experiencing righteous indignation. We're experiencing hurt, and we channel it through anger.
Through anger.
And so, like, you know, that usually ends up being destructive, destructive on us and destructive on the people we encounter.
That's a great point. Great point. I work with kids, and I was sharing this with Elizabeth, where she's heard me sometimes. I'll come home, and I'm just venting about certain things or my experiences I may have for today. And one of the things, just kind of piggybacking off of what you are saying, is I've had students that honestly were just anger or fighters by nature. And when they are sent to me or when I actually confront them about their anger or about how they are reacting, one of the things I say is, you know, young lady, good. I'm glad you're angry. And it throws them off. And they're like, what does he mean? I'm glad I'm angry. Because what I'm trying to reiterate to them is you can channel that. Right now you're channeling it in a wrong manner. It's not in a manner that is conducive to your productivity. But if you're using this anger to pursue a degree, if someone is telling you or suggesting that you're not smart enough and you use that anger to say, excuse me, you know, I'm very well capable, you're channeling, you know, using that in the right direction. So the whole point is not to get rid of it, because some things we're just built as, you know, we're born, you know, with that particular, you know, emotion, with that particular trait. And it's not to get rid of it, but just to try to put it in the right direction.
Yeah, and understanding where it comes from. I think that comes through, you know, self-reflection, introspection, something that I encourage men, and especially during this time in 2020, I think for a lot of us, we're being introspective. We're discovering who we are and who we are not. And I think that's so important to be self-aware, because how you show up in life determines your success or failure. So it's definitely important that you understand and know and be able to trace the pathology of a thing, you know?
You know, you're a therapist, you mentioned, and I think we're in this interesting era. You know, as we look back on our elders and our ancestors, you know, I think this affects people across different cultures, but specifically to the African-American experience, that suppressed a lot of feelings and a lot of emotions.
Absolutely.
And so then you had a generation that carried that forward. So there was a lot of comfort. I don't want to use the word comfort, but there was a lot of secrets that were held in and a lot of emotions that were held back. And now I feel like we've reached this other end of the spectrum where we're putting a label on everything. So now it's almost like the pendulum has swung like the other extreme, mm-hmm. where some emotions are totally normal that people are experiencing, especially amongst adolescents. We see a lot of transition and a lot of change, and they have different challenges now that we didn't have with social media, right? Giving them different avenues to information and things that weren't really as prevalent, even the internet itself, right? How do you like guide people to kind of find the balance with managing their mental health? Because it is important, but not like overdoing it, you know, where they're over, right, measuring every aspect of every emotion.
You know, that's a good question. And that's like, you know, the $1 million question. But I know for me, like I've been telling people, you know, we're responsible for our mental health. We're responsible for our success in life. And so when you understand that you're responsible for it, then you should feel empowered. And one of the things I always say is that, you know, life happens to us, but life also happens from us. So if you focus on just what's happening to you, you're disempowered. But if you focus and find the balance on what's happening from you, then you're empowered. And we're, as human beings, we're able to honor both spaces, right? So we're able to honor the things that are happening that can cause mental health, but we're also able to honor space that, you know, I'm still empowered to choose the life that I want to have. And so for me, it's about honoring those spaces as they come, not giving space for victimization, You know, I think we're in a culture where it's like, you know, I was telling somebody last night in an interview, I said, you know, one of the worst things that's happened is like people know the psychological language. So everybody's like, I'm bipolar, I'm this, I'm that, I'm CBT, I need right. CBT, and I need this, and da da da. And it's like, you don't understand, you know, they have the vocabulary, but they don't understand the concept of the concept behind it or the history behind it, right? Or the details or the technical skills of it. So, you know, I think we have to empower people to know that they're responsible for their lives. And that's the most important thing, that especially with young people whom I work with as well, Kay. You know, I tell them, I say, you are responsible for your success or failure. You're right. responsible. You know, when it comes to our mental health, we have to be on the offense, not the defense. So you have to know ahead of time that stuff is going to get crazy. You have to know ahead of time that life is going to test your gangster. You have to know ahead of time that things are going to come at you. But you have to be prepared for that. And so that's the thing. Like, I don't like to leave people in a space of feeling victimized. I always like to leave my clients or whomever I'm speaking to, I like to leave them feeling empowered, because that's the only way you can grow and that's the only way you can achieve in life.
How do you even go about letting any of your clients or students or people that you interact with know that you're responsible for your actions? Let me tell you why I ask that, because in this society, as Elizabeth has touched on, even you touched on, everyone now is given a label. You know, I work with these students, these children, and it's amazing to me, they're so quick to label, as you said. I mean, they're so quick to prescribe, as you said. But what they fail to do is say, you know, little Johnny, Sarah, you're responsible for this. Yes, you may have an anger problem. We all have anger problems, you know.
Right.
You know, so how do you go about letting a client or letting a celebrity client know, hey, you're responsible for your actions?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I had a celebrity, this was like maybe 2 years ago, and I had a couple sessions with them, and they had just had a scandal, like a Me Too scandal type of thing. And they came to me, and they were just like, apparently, you know, the situation was that the client apparently was sexually, used inappropriate language with a female coworker, right? And when we had the session, all he kept doing was saying, like, I mean, we joked every day. We, you know, she made comments and did that. And I said, so I went like this. So in the session, I went like this. I said, so is she the one that got fired? Is she the one that's in the news right now? Mm-hmm. No, you are. Right? And look, I'm the nicest guy. I'm very kind. I'm very gentle. But I'm definitely not afraid to say, like, but bro, it's you.
Right.
And I said to him, I said, so the onus is on you. I said, so regardless of all the extra stuff that's happening, you chose to interact with this woman in a certain way, and you're married. Mm-hmm. So where's the responsibility? So who's at fault for this truth? Mm-hmm. I said, because if you hadn't engaged, then this wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. You know? And then also, too, I'm very transparent about my life and things that I've experienced, things that I've had to overcome, things that could have left me in a victimized state. And that's the benefit of being a coach versus a traditional therapist. It's like, I can share about my life. Traditional therapy,
you can, really right, can't. Right.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, because it runs into transference and counter-transference and those types of things. But I don't tell people things that I myself haven't done or wouldn't do. And so I think a part of it is, I know what it's like to feel like a victim. I know what it's like to victimize yourself. I know what it's like
to feel exhausting.
And it's exhausting and it's comforting too.
Right.
It's
the right, same thing, right, like, right. You know? Because you never move forward. It's like you just stay static. Because you're the victim and you can't do anything about it because people keep victimizing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, being a victim is like romanticized.
It is.
It's romanticizing, especially in our country. So, you know, I understand it, right? But, you know, I say to them, I say, listen, if you like where you are, cool. If not, you're going to have to make certain changes and make certain decisions to get you to the place that you want to get to. It's just that simple.
Let me tell you, that was a fat chewing session right there. For those of you who don't know, you know, of course, with Purvis being from, you know, Texas, you know, me being from Georgia, it felt like we were just on the porch.
Are you just going to leave me out?
So, really, I'm sorry, really? Sweetie. You know, she's Chicago, so she can't really relate. You know,
and
no, but the amazing thing is, when Elizabeth moved here, we would actually travel. There would be times we would just travel, you know, a couple hours out. You know, if you're not familiar with the location that we're currently in, we can travel 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours, and we're in the mountains. Another 2 hours, we're at the beach. And what amazes me is Elizabeth has never seen these types of trees in this country, or I guess you could say suburban setting. And she's always amazed at it. And I'm like, these are trees. But from where she, you know, dwelt or where she came from, it wasn't a lot of that. So I pick at her, but, you know, she's getting some countryness to her.
He's getting a little city-fied too, so it goes both ways.
Oh, listen, that's the balance. That's the balance.
We always do this. But no, there was a quote that I'm looking at that I saw that I wanted to point out that I loved. It said, choose your pain, the pain of breaking free or the pain of staying and being undervalued and disrespected. And I think we've all been there. Like for me personally, and Kay and I have talks about this all the time, sometimes we almost have self-limiting beliefs. And so we pigeonhole yes. ourselves. And it's painful to be there because those self-limiting beliefs, we never like want to push out of that. We mm-hmm. want to use that as a way to kind of justify
as a crutch.
Not moving forward or as a crutch. And so I love yeah. that quote of yours because a lot of your therapy seems to be around people releasing, letting go. Understanding the connection of why something is happening, using it constructively. Like I before you used the Rosa Parks example, I was listening to your video where you said that, like, hey, she was angry too, but mm-hmm. she used it in a constructive way. So as you're like coaching people who are just stuck, like they just feel yeah. like they can't get out of a certain scenario, whether it's constantly having cyclical relationships that are unhealthy or toxic, or mm-hmm. just like you explained with that celebrity where you're coaching someone and they just don't see themselves as being able to like change that behavior, you know, what techniques do you find helpful? I know you talked about the accountability piece, but what other things do you say to those type of people to help them?
I ask them, what do they know to be true about themselves? And those, what do you know to be true has to be 5 positive things that you know about yourself. Because too often, I think we identify with the trauma or the obstacles or the things that happen to us in life. We take it on as an identity. And we kind of forget who we really are. And I think the only way you can build a new life is on a positive foundation. And so that foundation has to be like, yo, I know I'm dope. I'm amazing. So let me share this. Like, I've experienced hell in my life. You know, I'm 40 years old, and for most of my life, it's been hellish. And I don't say that in a feel sorry for purpose way. I'm saying it in a real way. It's been very hellish. But one thing I had to understand and discover was that I was amazing and I'm strong. I'm tougher than most people, you know what I mean? Because I've been able to weather a lot of storms, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had to resolve and make peace with the fact that I was dope. And I think so many people, we haven't done that. Because if we knew how amazing we were, we wouldn't settle for the things that we settle for. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times that goes with worth. I think many of us struggle with, you know, worthiness and things like that. And I tell clients, the moment you come out the womb, you're worthy.
Yeah, because it was hard to get there. What the chances of you being born were really, really slim.
The odds were already
a trillion.
And I think we don't think about that, right? Mm-hmm. We don't think about that. Like, you were so special that God thought about you. Mm-hmm. And said, you should be here, right? Mm-hmm. So there's something for you. And I think, I'm being honest with you, I've done this exercise with celebrities, and they can't name 5 things about themselves that they think are amazing. You know, a lot of times, people need to understand, a lot of times success is really a trauma response. It's not always done
on
purpose.
That's true, that's true. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so,
explain a little bit, elaborate on that a little bit so people understand what you're saying. I think I know what you're saying, but I want to hear kind of your perspective on that.
Well, I love pop culture, so I always use them as references. I don't know if you saw the Quincy Jones documentary
yes.
on Netflix.
Yes, he went through a lot of stuff. Yes.
He went through a lot of stuff. If you think about it, his success wasn't on purpose. It was to run away from his mother. Mm-hmm. Remember how he connected the dots?
Yep.
Like, he was out, he was running away from that life, from his family, and so that was a trauma response and not something he intentionally set on doing. The relationships with women, the failed relationships, mm-hmm. all those things that happened were all due to his, due to the yeah. fact that he had a broken relationship with his mother. You know, so that's what I mean by a trauma response. Like, you know, a lot of people are successful because people said they couldn't be successful. A lot of people are successful because they grew up in abuse or they grew up with low self-esteem and they want to show those who made fun of them, like, yo, I made it. You know, so it's not done on purpose. I didn't need to become successful for the purpose of being successful, right? Which is the achievement, the self-actualization. I became successful to prove
people wrong. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you something, because I think everyone goes through that phase of, like you said, whether it's traumatic experiences as being a child, you know, coming up in an impoverished, you know, situation. What separates those who have the wherewithal, the mindset to know, yes, God put me here for a purpose, for a reason. I'm going to go this way, which we know, unfortunately, is the minority, okay? The majority are the ones who, of course, just sit around, mope, complain, and I know I've done that, okay? So that's why I can relate to that. But what do you think separates the haves and the have-nots who come from the same setting or come from various traumatic experiences? You know, what separates those two?
Before I answer that, did I explain the trauma response?
Because I was, and before you answer his question, I agree with you, because you watch people that are successful and if you listen, I love watching biographies because I'm very fascinated by human behavior, why people do what they do, the psychology of it. And you're right, when they're explaining their success, it's like, I just never want to be this, or I want to prove this person wrong. And then when you, there's always a connected dot there, and you look at their story, and they could be successful in this one realm, but there's all these other things that have been hampered, like the personal relationships, for example, or just their...
Mariah Carey.
Oh, she went through so much stuff,
She's been through so much stuff, but the one thing that I will say to UK that Mariah Carey had, that I think most people don't have, she knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that she was going to be successful. Mm-hmm. She knew from a child. She said whatever she said to herself as a child, that no matter what I go through, I know that I'm going to be a success. And that is one of the most powerful things, is the knowing. Mm-hmm. Not the belief, but what you know.
Yeah.
Right? Because beliefs can change. But what you know can never be taken away from you. So I think for many of us, it's the dialogue. It's what we tell ourselves. It's that self-narrative. For me, growing up being abused, I was molested as a child. I was bullied. I was emasculated. And I dealt with suicide ideation. And the thing that kept me going, living life, was there was a small voice in me that said, it's going to get better. You're going to make it through this. Mm-hmm. You're going to get through this. Mm-hmm. And that was like a surety that I had. And I don't even know why I had it, because everything around me
was messed up. Opposite. Right, right. Yeah. Right. That's that inner dialogue, that you were having.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was the inner dialogue. I was like, I know I'm going to be successful. And even in the midst of homelessness, poverty, people making fun of me, betrayal, even in my 20s and 30s, struggling, I was like, I'm going to be a success. And they would look at me like I was crazy. And fast forward, you know, today.
You're good. Right?
Yeah. You're in a better place. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, and there's still, and I'm still not even anywhere near where I want to be.
Right.
But if I had given up, if I didn't have that narrative inside of me that, I mean, I have many narratives, but the one that I chose to listen to the longest was that one that says you're going to make it through. And then also too, I want to add that both my parents, you know, my father passed away from a heroin overdose, but when he was in his lucid states and when he wasn't on drugs, he was an amazing father. And one of the things that they told all of us every day is that we were destined for greatness. My parents said that to us every day before we went to school. Mm-hmm. Now, when I got to school, I heard different things, but it was important that my day began with affirmation from my parents, and those are the things that kind of stay with me. Like, I remember that more than all the stuff people said about me. You know what I mean? So it's like, it was a combination of what my parents were saying and a combination of just hearing that voice saying, like, yo, just keep going.
Wow. Well, you answered my question as well as other questions that I hadn't even asked yet.
So is that the basis for your book? Tell our listeners a little bit about your book that you wrote.
So Survival Mode is, oh my God, I love that book. Not because I wrote it, but I actually was reading it the other day and I was like, oh, this is really, really good. it's my story brief, obviously very brief, in the stories of men whom I've had the pleasure of walking through a process. And I said, what were the commonalities in all of us getting to the place that we're at now? And so I broke it down into the four A's of survival mode, which is acknowledgement, articulation, acceptance, and alchemy. And those were the four A's that we all use to get us toward the place that we're in right now. Now, granted, my life isn't perfect. Neither are the lives of the men that I'm talking about. But where we are is on the journey towards wholeness. Where we are is on the journey of thriving. And so the book is designed to teach men who may not necessarily be comfortable going to see a therapist to use these things in the interim. Before they go see a therapist. Because after you read the book, you're going to want to see it. You're going to want to see a therapist.
No, I think what you're saying is so important, because sometimes, and I like that you coach celebrities, and I know some people that are celebrities, and people always think, well, they have all the success and all this stuff, but it's really has nothing to do with like who they are or the battles they're dealing with internally, which is why you always see these stories of people having breakdowns and breakthroughs and suicide, because there's a lot of angst that's not dealt with that can't be solved through no matter how much success you have. And I remember reading something interesting the other day, and this guy used the example of, if you were in a room with Oprah Winfrey and others, people would think that they may think someone else has made the most mistakes or had the most failures, but you know who actually has had the most failures? Oprah Winfrey. But people wouldn't think that, because they would look and say, you're a billionaire, you have this mega empire, you have this network, you have all these things going, but they wouldn't see all of the background of all the other things that happen along the way. So I think it's nice that you're giving people a clear understanding that nothing is perfect. Like, everyone has their battles that they have to go through, no matter who you are or where you land, even. But it still doesn't mean you can't get to where you want to. But I think doing that emotional part of understanding who you are, that's the most, because you got to live with yourself forever.
Everything else is fluid. And that's exactly what I was going to say. And I said, you know, I think in some regards it's even more challenging for celebrities, because they are under a microscope, and it's like, you know, I got to be this public persona and also be the human being at the same time, you know. So it's definitely challenging, but it can be done, right? If you do the work. And that's the thing that I always tell people, you can get to as a place of wholeness. And wholeness for me, my definition of wholeness is learning to master the things that once mastered you. So it doesn't mean a life of perfection or that you don't have down
And it's continual. I think that's the frustrating part, because people think, can I just solve through this and be done with it? But because life just constantly has things that are going to be thrown at you that are going to change and alter, right, who you are on some level. So it's almost like what they call emotional regulation. It's a continuous like process.
But if you know, for instance, so for me, I look back at my life and say, yo, I made it through all of that crap. I know I can make it through whatever it is I'm going through right now. And you have to be able to tell yourself that.
What do you tell people that can't at this point see that? Like, someone who's in a very traumatic situation, they've been through a lot of traumas, they just can't see anything positive. Like, they just can't see it. How do you coach someone through that to recognize that they can get through it?
Well, one thing that you said that's so vital, to be able to see something positive. And one of the things that I'm very fearful for with people is, if you can't see your way out of something, I'm very concerned, because that, to me, I think suicide is the death of imagination. You have to be able to imagine your way out of this situation or see that there's something better on the other side, right? So if you can't see that, then we're in trouble, right? And one of the things that I tell people is like, listen, if you just make it through this day, if you make it through this night, and you wake up the next day, let's talk. If you don't think you're going to make it through this night or through this time, all right, you know what I mean? There's nothing I can do. But if you wake up the next day, then there's a purpose, there's life to be lived, there's something for you. And I tell them, like, I've been where you've been at, which is why I think God allowed me to go through all the hell that I've been through. Because I've had those moments where I'm like, yo, I'm not going to make it through this. And I woke up and I just took it day by day. And that's the thing. You have to take when you are in that space, you have to take it day by day, and you have to surrender. This is the thing. Being right, my mentor, LaJoy Glasper, always says, being right is overrated. you have to be willing to be wrong. You know, you have to be willing to be wrong. I had to be wrong about certain things in my life.
That's how you learn. It's how you learn. It's the only way you can grow. You know? Yes.
You learn through being wrong.
And it's so funny you say that, because, like, I used to think I knew everything. And my dad was saying to me recently, he's like, you're so much more, like, quiet and contemplative. Because I'm like, I realize there's so much I don't know. So I'm always trying to, like, absorb what other people are saying around me and, like, take that in, because I'm like, there's so much. And I think when you have that humility, the world is, like, open, because there's so much we can learn from each other, you know.
And that's why Oprah is so successful. Think about it. Oprah is a billionaire. She has people like me or like you on her show all the time to glean from. Mm-hmm. That's really the key to her success, is that she's willing to learn.
That's true. That's a good point.
You know? But, yeah, to that question, it's like, you know, that's a very, you know, deep, deep question. But it's like, it's one of those things you have to take it day by day, but you have to be able to see your way out of the situation. So if I had to sit there and talk to you for hours on end to get you to be able to see, because I understand what depth of imagination can do, then I'll do it. But we have to be willing to be wrong.
Have you ever found yourself in that situation where you just had to let a client know, look, you don't even see tomorrow, so it's not much I can do for you right now?
Yes. Yeah. Because, number one, I resolved the fact that I'm not Jesus. Praise the Lord. And so...
just Dr. Purvis here. Just Dr. Purvis, not Jesus.
I'm okay with that. Like, and again, if I can't help a certain client, that doesn't take away anything from me or the work or the blessings that God has used me to be to other people. You know what I mean? So, like, if we don't rock, we just don't rock. But I definitely will tell that person, like, I definitely have to tell that person, yo, in order to get to where you want to get to, you're going to have to be able to see your way there.
That's a good point.
And that's the one thing that's the truth.
That's a good point. You know, as men, I find that a lot of times we smother ourselves without having releases or outlets. I'm curious, when you're dealing with, you know, males in particular, and they you know, women are always talking. No offense to women, but I say this to Elizabeth all the time.
Yeah, they're very communal. Women by nature are communal.
Exactly. So, you know, they're releasing even when they don't know they're releasing, okay? Mm-hmm. Us men, we keep a lot of things pent up, bottled in. What would you suggest for men who struggle with just having that communicative piece? What would you suggest to them to open up more so that we don't and they don't keep a lot of things bottled up inside and still holding on to their masculinity? Because a lot of men feel like, well, if I'm talking every time about something I'm going through, I'm not masculine enough. How would you relay that to a man struggling with that?
Well, I mean, it's all about what do you desire for your life, right? Is where you are, are you comfortable with that, right? You know, because I think it's important. Are you comfortable with suppressing? And if you're okay with that, what can I say to that? But if you want to have freedom, which is your birthright, if you want to honor your humanity, which is your birthright, you're going to have to learn how to be vulnerable. Now, here's the thing with vulnerability. Vulnerability involves two things, risk and reward. You know, the risk that you're being seen, that somebody can take advantage of that information, people can make fun of you, they can reject you. But the reward is that you can get the help that you need. And so I encourage men, vulnerability is a strength, but you just have to be judicious and discerning about whom you're vulnerable with and what you're vulnerable about.
Right.
But you're going to need vulnerability to get to the space that you want to get to. Because think about it in life. If you want to be in love, you have to be vulnerable to being hurt. If you want to have success in life, you have to be vulnerable to failing, right? So that's the risk, right? We take risk every day. Why not take a risk with getting better or getting to the place that you want to get to? And so I encourage men to, like, find that one person who, my old business partner used to say, your spotter, like in the gym. Like somebody who can help you with the weight that you're carrying, right? Find one person whom you can share with, whom you can unpack with. I think that's very, very important, because you can't, you know, the thing is that, you know, emotions don't die, but they just transform, and they show up in the most inopportune ways. right? And thusly, you know, trauma that's not transformed, we transmit and then we transact with. And so if you want to have better in your life, you're going to have to find someone whom, you know, because your healing is in words. All therapy is an exchange of words, right? And the more words you use, the greater your healing can be. The more specific words you use, the greater your healing can be. So I encourage men to just, even the principle of therapy, which is an exchange of words, find somebody whom you feel comfortable with that you can share with. And also, too, for women, understanding that window of opportunity for a man to be vulnerable is very, very small. And if it's compromised, it probably won't open up again.
It's locked down.
It's a wrap. It's locked down forever.
Yep, that's right. You know, I really like that analogy you use with the spotter in the gym. And I'm going to tell you something. What I pick up from you in this interview that we've had is you have a mentality. I heard a man say once, he said, "Don't follow me, lead with me." You really appear to have that aura about yourself. Don't just follow me, lead with me, because we're helping to lead ourselves through this journey. And I respect that.
And I think I figured out I figured out your gospel. It's the healing journey for people. It feels just very authentic that you're sharing your experience, and your experience is real. And I think that's what's allowed you to reach and help other people bridge that gap. So don't negate that. I'm just listening to you. I'm like, wow, I could feel some of the things. I haven't lived your life, but I could feel some of the things you've gone through just through your words and your wisdom. So just keep sharing that wisdom. I don't know. Is there anything else?
I'm going to be honest with you. If I still just imagine me and Dr. Purvis sitting on the porch in the South and sipping
again,
on a glass of lemonade. And
drinking
just
some tea.
Oh my goodness, man. Yes, yes. And just with just these nuggets of wisdom, which I think men amongst ourselves, and yes, I'm being somewhat biased, we don't share enough. You know, we don't sharpen one another enough. So again, just big respect to you.
Yeah, thank you
and
so much.
And I wanted to add, if I can, you know, if we think about the suicide rates, they're so alarming, especially in men of color, right? And the fastest growing suicide rate is in young boys ages 5 to 12.
Right? 5 to 12,
so it's already
5
to 12.
That's young.
Then the next is 18 to 22, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that is so alarming, right? So that means that we have to teach our young boys, our babies, out the womb, it's okay to cry. It's okay to experience your human emotions.
Right.
It's okay to find someone to vent to. You know what I mean? We have to teach them that early.
Yeah.
Good point.
Because it's very long.
And that was to what you already answered, just keeping so many things bottled up, but learning how to release.
Yeah.
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 What a good
I'm sorry.
No, keep going.
Yeah, by all means, continue.
Keep going.
Yeah, no, I think to your point, it's like, you know, when you keep things bottled up, what happens? You shake the bottle, then what happens? You open it, and then it just explodes everywhere. You know, I have a story that I share about in the book. I share this all the time. I was in D.C. I was hired to do a staff development training for an organization. And this organization, I think, was community outreach. So a lot of the employees were from the neighborhood. And so they wanted me to work by gender. So they wanted me to do a session with the men and then one with the women, then a combined one. So in the men's session, these are brothers from Southeast DC, about as hood as it gets. Right. And so I'm doing a session and I'm just talking about my life and things, you know, I'm just, you know, free, you know, carefree talking about my life and things that I experienced and talking about the importance of emotions and whatnot. And I'm looking in front of me, this brother, he just starts crying. And I go to him, I say, "Is it okay if I put my hand on your shoulder?" And he says, "Yes." And I said, "What's going on?" And he was like, he said, "My mother died when I was 5 and I never cried." And he was just like, "You made it okay for me to cry."
Mm.
Then across the table, this other brother starts crying because he had found his grandmother in a crack-induced coma that morning.
Mm.
And there was no food in the refrigerator. It was just bread in the refrigerator. Then the other one started, like, it was just this trickle-down effect. So it's like the importance of, there's so many men who need to release, who need a release. And so it's important that we create environments for men to release without judgment. No matter what the scenario is, we want to make sure that a man lives to see another day and that he lives in the purpose that God created him for. You know, so it's important that we create spaces for men to release without judgment, and leave them not feeling. Leave them. Sorry, someone just called me. Sorry. Okay. Leave them not feeling shamed, but feeling like empowered in their masculinity.
Awesome.
Wow. So this is such great information, Dr. Purvis. We're going to have you come back again.
Yes.
Because I don't think we could do this all in one show.
Yeah. That's why we said, look, continue to talk, sir. I mean, you know, and again, just respect from one male to another male, being open as you are and getting other men to open, you know, that's a gift. That's a trait and that's a power. And I'm sure you're very well aware of that. So keep sharing, man.
Thank you guys so much.
Tell our listeners where they can find you, what projects you're working on. Tell them the name of your book, where they can get your
And I love the name of the book, by the way. I'm sorry I had to jump right in again, because that's a powerful title. Where did that come? Sir Thriving, ladies and gentlemen. Not surviving, Sir Thriving.
Sir Thriving. So honestly, someone prophesied to me like 2 years ago that I was going to write a book for men. And I was just like, I was done. I didn't think I was going to write another book. Then one day, I was thinking, I was like, with this book, I want to take men, because I started writing it before I had a title. And I said I wanted to take men from surviving to thriving. Mm. And I was like, oh, survival mode. So, yes. So you always hear about survival mode. I went into survival mode. I was like, I want to take men into survival mode. Mm. And so that's what.
So not just surviving, but thriving, right?
Yeah, the book being the bridge. The book is the bridge from surviving to thriving.
Right.
Powerful.
Very powerful. Where can people find you?
You can find me on social media at Purvis Taylor. I gotta follow you guys. I'm so sorry. I'm very bad at that stuff.
It's okay.
You can follow me on Instagram at Purvis Taylor, PERVISTAYLOR, and Facebook and LinkedIn. Purvis. Just Google me.
All right. And he's Dr. Purvis Taylor.
Doctor.
He earned that.
Doctor.
I gotta keep reminding you.
He's playing the humility role right now. Don't call me. Don't worry about it. You work too hard, like Elizabeth stated. I have nothing but respect for it. My stepbrother, when he earned his doctorate, I told him, because we would always kind of have that sibling rivalry. When he first attained his doctorate from the University of Florida, I said, all right, I'm going to call you for the first time, Dr. Freeman. And he looked like, what? Really? I'm like, you earned that, man. So I got to give you respect for it.
And is there?
I appreciate that, guys.
Yeah. And is there any projects that you're working on that you want to make people aware of?
I am not working on anything, but I'm pretty sure like within the next 2 weeks, something's going to come to me. I've been thinking the space of vulnerability has been coming up for me so much in my spirit. So I'm like, maybe I'll write something around that.
Sounds like a second book.
Yeah.
Saying.
Hint, hint.
So thank you so much, Dr. Purvis Taylor, for coming on the show and telling us about your experiences and how you help people heal through different traumas and not survive but thrive through that bridge. We're gonna leave the show at this mark, and you guys know you can listen to us on the Anchor app, iTunes, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. And until next time, XOXO. Take care.